This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr., ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Kenny and Golic Jr. is presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us via the Goodyear Hotline. And Gojo, week six of the NFL season didn't really feature a lot of closely contested games. The average margin of victory was 16.5 points. You only had 3 one-score games, but we got a pretty good one in the late window between the Cowboys and Patriots, a back-and-forth game. You saw 5 scores in the fourth quarter of that game and overtime, and the Cowboys were able to find themselves on the winning side of it, man. How impressive was that win by Dallas?
Impressive enough, and they were able to find their way out of it, right? Like, I don't know if we're going to know what to do with this Patriots team fully this season, Chris, because we know this Patriots team has looked really inept at certain times this year, has looked like a team with a young quarterback and a defense that's had some injuries, had some different guys in the mix. But it's also still the Bill Belichick coach Patriots. Mac Jones started the game, 10 for 10 and looked invincible for a little while. So I think they get credit for finding their way through this, especially knowing, all right, Dak walks out of this with a calf strain that you were a little worried about. Tyron Smith came into this game with a designation, I think, for a neck injury and missed some snaps during the body of this game. So you survived the scares and were able to come out on the other side because your quarterback is still better than the rest.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing for the Cowboys, like their quarterback being able to play at a level that helps you overcome coaching and whatever deficiencies that you might have in the way of injury. And you couple that with an opportunistic defense, guys that make plays, guys that create disruption. You saw it yesterday with Trayvon Diggs with the pick six, but also with Randy Gregory coming to the party, being able to get a couple of quarterback hits and a forced fumble on a strip sack. And then, of course, being able to block the punt. So when you start putting those things together, that gives you an opportunity to be able to win tough games on the road, even when your team collectively doesn't bring their A-plus game. So I just think that was probably the most impressive part of it for me yesterday with the Cowboys. The fact that they were on the road, didn't necessarily play sharp football, a little sloppy at times, and they were able to find themselves on the winning side of that matchup.
They were, and their defense has done exactly what we've asked them to do so far, Chris, but I will say, Trevon Diggs is sort of the perfect embodiment of what that defense is, right? We always hear bend, don't break. This is boom or bust. Like,
yes.
The same Trevon Diggs that undercut and took that pick six was the one that got burnt bad on a double move for a touchdown later on. He's going to take a bunch of chances and live by the skin of his seat here. But they've paid off more often than not. And that's all this offense really needs, right? Like, they just got, I just saw Adam Schefter, our ESPN NFL Insider report. Lael Collins was just reinstated after his 5-game suspension. So that O-line's going to get healthier and better. And as long as that bedrock is there, Chris, as we watch some other teams really deal with attrition right now in the NFL, it's probably as simple as, man, if Zach Martin, Tyron Smith, Lael Collins, and this group can stay healthy up front, this team's going to win a whole lot of football games, and it might not be more complicated than that.
No question about it. I mean, there's a reason why Mina Kimes calls this Dallas Cowboys offense a buzzsaw. I mean, that's how they run through opposing defenses. You see what Dak Prescott did in overtime, a perfect 5 for 5 for 72 yards, including the game winner. Like, him being able to step up and make the plays when you need it the most, like, that's impressive to me. Like, when you have a quarterback that's able to make those plays in those clutch moments, like we saw at the end of regulation, the completion of Cedric Wilson on fourth down, or the completion of CeeDee Lamb on 3rd and 25 to set up a Greg Zuerlein field goal to tie the game and send it into OT. Like, those are the plays that not every single quarterback makes, but when you got a guy that's capable of doing that, that just instills confidence throughout that locker room and throughout the entire organization. And that's why I believe this Dallas Cowboys team is not just a team that's running around with a bunch of hype. I think they're a team that actually can contend for a championship.
Now, is there anything that can throw these guys off the trail? Ryan Clark, our ESPN NFL analyst, was on Get Up and pointed to one person, really one coach on this staff, that could undermine the Cowboys' season.
Oh, he's the absolute worst coach on the entire staff. Mike McCarthy is what's going to hold the Dallas Cowboys back from winning the Super Bowl. If we get down the stretch and we're going to have to point to one person that made a mistake, one person that didn't do their job well, it's going to be Mike McCarthy. In all of these weeks, in these 6 weeks, and I'm not here calling for his job. So I want to say that first. I'm not saying that Mike McCarthy should be fired.
Sure.
What I'm saying is he should do his job better. When you look at this team, you look at the quarterback doing his job, the running back doing his job, defense doing their job. Do you have anything to say about Kellen Moore other than that he's going to be a head coach next year? Anything to say about Dan Quinn other than that he's reinvented himself as a play caller and defensive coordinator, and he has this defense playing ball well? The only coach we have spoken about from the Dallas Cowboys, and it hasn't been glowing, is Mike McCarthy.
Canny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canny. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Pet protection comes free with auto collision coverage. Visit progressive.com. Chris, we have talked about Mike McCarthy. He's an easy punching bag on this team because he came over after a tenure with the Green Bay Packers, where by the end he looked like a relic of a bygone time, where Aaron Rodgers and that team had left him behind. And so now he comes here, and Kellen Moore's calling the plays, wheeling and dealing. And so his decision-making, really the only thing we seem like left on his plate, is the thing that comes under fire. I always wonder this, though, with truly great teams, where you've got a quarterback like Dak Prescott and a unit on offense that this special. Most of that seems like it's got the ability to overcome one or two bad decisions by this coach. For the most part, how worried are you about this when it comes time for the playoffs, for the Super Bowl, where they want to go, that his decision-making could be the difference?
I'm not worried about it because Mike McCarthy has proven himself to be a coach that you can win a Super Bowl with. I mean, even if you want to put more credit on Aaron Rodgers as opposed to McCarthy, I mean, they were still able to get it done back in 2010. Like, that actually happened. So, I mean, as far as being a coach that can put his team in position to be able to have success, yeah, I believe that Mike McCarthy more often than not is going to do that. Are there going to be some mistakes along the way? Absolutely. But you're just hoping that when those things do pop up, they're not at the most critical junctures. And even if they just so happen to be, you've got the talent to be able to overcome those things. And when you look at this Cowboys team, all three phases, like they absolutely check that box in terms of being a group that can overcome bad coaching.
They have, and they've looked at, and most of that goes to the quarterback and Dak Prescott. You're right.
Yeah.
The only thing I will say, Chris, that this put in my mind is, all right, we heard Ryan Clark say it, and it's a, you know, not really a secret. Kellen Moore's going to be coaching some NFL team next year as the head coach. Like, that much we can all be sure of.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing I thought was, well, you know what? Maybe that puts a little more pressure on. We talked about the last dance in Green Bay. It can feel some type of way like that here. I mean, hell, we're getting ready to talk about an LSU team that looked like world beaters in 2019 and then lost Joe Brady, the offensive coordinator. And ever since, it hasn't quite looked so right. If the Dallas Cowboys are going to lose Kellen Moore here and they don't win a Super Bowl this season, that could really start to undo some things here. Even as good as Dak Prescott has played, we see what a unique combination that offense and offensive coordinator's been.
Well, Mike, I'll say this. If they don't win a Super Bowl this year, I'm not too sure that they end up losing Kellen Moore, because I'm not sure that Mike McCarthy continues to be the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. Like, I know that Jerry Jones has a love affair with Kellen Moore. Like, this is one of his guys, one of his former players that has developed into one of the best play callers in the NFL. And from an X's and O's standpoint, he can draw it up with the best of them. So I'm not sure that Jerry Jones lets Kellen Moore walk out of the building if this team falls short of the expectation, which is winning a championship. So I think it could be a situation where Jerry Jones decides to part ways with Mike McCarthy in order to usher in the Kellen Moore era of the Dallas Cowboys. Keeping in mind what happened in 2007 when Jerry Jones decided that he had a love affair with one of his former players in Jason Garrett, who was a hot name in the coaching hiring cycle, and he decided to make him one of the highest paid assistant coaches in the NFL, hiring him as the offensive coordinator before he hired Wade Phillips as the head coach. And it was the worst kept secret on the team that the offensive coordinator had more power than the head coach. Now, ultimately, Wade Phillips ended up getting fired and they elevated Jason Garrett to the head coach. I'm just saying, I wouldn't be surprised if this ends up being a similar dynamic, a similar situation, if this team falls short of winning a chip this year. Just saying.
At Chris Canny 99, at Mike Golic Jr. on Twitter. I feel like most Cowboys fans would sign up for that tomorrow if you asked them for it, Chris. It is what it is. We understand what Mike McCarthy's accomplished in this league, but man, oh man, Kellen Moore seems to be the first name out of most people's mouth when it comes to something good going on with this team.
No question about it. I mean, listen, a couple of weeks ago against the Giants, he had that play that he drew up in the red zone to Ezekiel Elliott. And Gojo, I played 11 years in the National Football League. I've been around this game for the last 17 years, I've never seen that play before. Like, I've never seen it. Like, I mean, he's literally doing things that we have not seen from an X's and O's standpoint. So just the level of creativity that he has, and then marrying that with the sequences of the play callings, the play calls that he has, like, yeah, he's definitely one of those coaches that that makes the most out of the talent that's available to him. Hell of a lot of talent on the offensive side for the Dallas Cowboys, but Kellen Moore does a great job of being able to orchestrate it all, which is why he deserves to be one of those hot names when the coaching hiring cycle begins later on this winter.
Coming up next, we mentioned this situation feels eerily similar to what we saw going on down in Baton Rouge back in 2019 when LSU was in the midst of one of the most historic college football seasons we've ever seen. Fast forward 2 years, Edo going to be out after this season as the Tigers head coach. Is that LSU job now the best left in college football? We'll get to that with our guest next here on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
And what a fitting way to end this football game. The Boilermakers with their fourth takeaway of the afternoon. And Purdue comes into Iowa City and stuns the second-ranked Hawkeyes. 24-7 the final score.
That sound courtesy of Learfield IMG. Purdue taking down number two Iowa. The celebratory moment of the week. The celebratory moment of the week is brought to you by Allstate. Save money like a champion with Allstate. Championship savings for the win. And also shout out to Purdue's football's Twitter account because they had to win after they posted this saying that they beat the number two out of Iowa. Really impressive from them as well. This is Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. And right now, we're going to go out to the Goodyear Hotline and bring in Spencer Hall, host on the SEC Network, Thinking Out Loud. Spencer, how you doing? You're on with Canty and Golic Jr.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Doing pretty good, my man. Doing pretty good. So we got to get to the news of the weekend in the SEC, and that was the surprise of Ed Orgeron and LSU mutually agreeing of parting ways over at the end of the season. It's been less than 2 years since the national championship. What ended up happening? How did this relationship devolve so quickly?
I think it devolved quickly on a couple of different fronts. First of all, performance. Nobody really gets curious about what else might be going wrong in any facet of your performance. If the wins are there, suddenly if the wins aren't there and he is, you know, around 500 since the championship, that's not going to please anyone in Baton Rouge. It's going to make everyone far more alert to any of your other flaws. And there were many when it came to Ed Orgeron, particularly his involvement as a named party in a Title IX investigation at LSU. And also some, you know, just messy kind of off the field stuff that really, you know, might not be pertinent in any other circumstance. But once everything starts to pile up, it becomes relevant too. All of this fell apart pretty quickly, you know, but it goes back to little things, management things like not interviewing your defensive coordinator before you hire him, even if he's somebody who coached there before, you know, constant staff overturn, the kind of stuff that you just go, yeah, if we're already unhappy about the on-field performance, once we consider everything else, it's a no-brainer.
Spencer, Edo was the guy that got hired because the team loved him. He was an interim coach that so many people looked at as, you know, the prodigal son comes home type deal where you get a local guy down there that everyone around the program likes. Do you think the decision-making that led to his hiring is going to affect the way they approach going after whoever replaces him?
Absolutely. I think everything that Ed Orgeron was is going to be in the reverse or inverse when it comes to his successor. If you look at the likely candidates for that job who've already been thrown around, they are anti-Ed. They are offensive coaches. They are coaches who are not native to Louisiana. They are coaches who are not sort of celebrated interims. But the thing that all of them are going to have in common is recruiting. Nobody who's getting an SEC gig, nobody, is going to come on board without a fearsome reputation as a recruiter. Because if you can lock down the state of Louisiana and you can get everybody who's supposed to go to Baton Rouge to put on purple and yellow and go to Baton Rouge, you're not going to lose many football games. So that's job one. The recruiter part of Ed Orgeron was never in doubt, and that's going to have to be true of his successor as well.
Kenny Angola Jr. talking to Spencer Hall on the Goodyear hotline. So, Spencer, is there an obvious name that for you looks like the best fit for this for both sides?
Mel Tucker. Mel Tucker. That just seems like the logical choice for me. He's somebody who has brought two programs back from moribund status to decent to thriving. I'd say decent at Colorado, because getting Colorado going is just – it's what we call a Sisyphean task. It's a boulder you push up a hill that becomes pebbles, and then you got to push it up again. Billy Wisely left and went to Michigan State, where he made them competitive in year two, and has done it, I think, in a real cool way, because I'm sure Mel Tucker has a fearsome reputation as a recruiter, and that's fine. What he's done at Michigan State was really canny. He put together a roster full of a diverse selection of transfers and sort of odds and ends that have really congealed to like make a really competitive football team who, you know, they're as good as anyone in the Big Ten right now, in my opinion, and that's in year two. If you can do that at East Lansing, then put him in Baton Rouge and then get out of his way.
Spencer, we had a wild scene on Saturday night at Tennessee at that Ole Miss-Tennessee game. What were your general takeaways from the fans throwing things at Lane Kiffin onto the field after that game?
They were really well-behaved. Like, think about that, y'all. We're really well-behaved most of the time. We do this every weekend. We take 80 to 100,000 people, put them in the stadium, in some cases make sure that they can purchase alcohol in the stadium, and then in every case usually correlate their presence with a heavy intake of alcohol outside of the stadium that nobody can control. We bring them in. We make them watch a really violent sport of which they are extremely emotionally invested. And by and large, 99.9999% of the time, they leave the stadium intact. Like, if I told you we got 80 to 100,000 people in that condition and then got them extremely impassioned and excited about something, you'd expect, oh, yeah, they tore the whole stadium down. No, we do this every single weekend. And I know that's probably not what Greg Sankey wants to hear, but most of these things are random. When you talk about, oh, well, like Lane incited it, or you talk about, well, you know, this fan base has been through a lot. No, I think moments like this where people are throwing garbage or acting a fool, they're mostly random. And you can't really do that much to prevent them other than, yeah, have security on hand. Yeah, make sure that there's penalties for this thing. Should they be punished? That's a dumb question. Of course they should be punished. Of course they should be penalized. We're adults. Stop asking the dumb questions, right? Understand, though, every now and then this is going to happen. I just sort of marvel that it doesn't happen more often.
That is true. As we heard from Nate Solder, the Giants offensive tackle earlier, who claimed that he once read a study that says the testosterone levels of fans go down after a loss, so they're in it with us. We should not be surprised by anything that happens with large crowds of people surrounding these spectacles here. That is what you can get when you check out Thinking Out Loud on the SEC Network. Check out the Shutdown Fullcast, college football and the internet's only college football podcast, wherever you get them. Spencer, we appreciate the time as always, sir. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Mike.
Awesome stuff there. Getting a little reaction to some garbage thrown out on the field. And the thing that made me feel oldest in all that, Chris, the fact that a mustard bottle got thrown on the field. I thought it was an actual mustard bottle, and then I was told by so many people, oh, duh, Mike, that's a flask. Why are you such an idiot? I've never felt older in my life than that moment.
Yeah, that was one of those moments for me, too. But let's not bury the lead here on this one. They were throwing golf balls at Lane Kiffin, but it's okay because they were driving range balls. They weren't actual balls that you would use out on the course. So at least somebody had some level of awareness when trying to decide what they were actually going to use to throw at their former head coach.
The gall to throw Pro V1s at Lane Kiffin out there in the middle of a game. But we can get to the brand of golf ball, the choice of angry SEC fans later. Coming up next, let's do the damn thing. NFL overreaction Monday coming off the weekend after this word from 5-Hour Energy. All right, guys, what's your ultimate game day experience? Tricked out man cave? Maybe deluxe tailgating? No matter your dream, enter the 5-Hour Energy football sweepstakes for a chance to win $10,000 and make your ultimate game day experience a reality. To enter, buy any 5-Hour Energy product. Upload the receipt. It's that easy. The 5-Hour Energy football sweepstakes. Enter today. No purchase necessary. Must be 18 and a legal resident of the U.S. This ends December 10th, 2021. For official rules and how to enter without purchase, visit the5hesport.com. That's 5hesport.com. Void where prohibited. Back after this, Candy Angola Jr., ESPN Radio.
This is This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us via the Goodyear Hotline. And since it's Overreaction Monday, we want you to chime in, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776, on the things that you might think are overreactions. And while we're waiting on you, we got a couple that are already teed up. So we're going to go to our guy behind the glass, Devin R. Dude, and kind of get it popping with some of these NFL overreactions that Gojo and I have been hearing so far.
All right, Chris, let's start with you. First up, the Detroit Lions should give Cam Newton a call. He has gotten vaccinated, said he's ready to play.
No, I think the Detroit Lions are good where they're at. Jared Goff, even though Dan Campbell did come out post-game press conference and say he needed more from his quarterback, just in terms of where the organization is at right now, I don't think it makes any sense for them to invest further in the quarterback position when they already got a guy that's got a pretty high salary. Doesn't make sense for them to go out and sign Cam Newton. To me, that's just throwing good money after bad. This organization is pushing the reset button. They're trying to establish a culture, and they need Jared Goff to try to play better, knowing that even if he doesn't play better, they're probably going to be in position to have a high draft pick to address the quarterback spot next year. So, no, they don't need to sign Cam Newton. That's an overreaction.
I'll say yes, only because I want to see what nickname Cam Newton gives Dan Campbell. That is purely where this lies here. You're right, Chris. I more think of this like the Lions should hope to be bad. This is a team that you're going to have to kind of, you know, have a controlled burn here if you want to get back to a place where you can really do something. I don't think it benefits them to be marginally bad. I think you need to just be all the way bad. Cam ain't going to help you do that.
All right, Mike, next up. The Cardinals are the best team in the NFL.
I think it's an overreaction.
You had to think about that for a second.
If you're asking me at this point, just looking, I would feel more comfortable with the Cowboys than I would the Cardinals. And I know the Cardinals, I believe, have won their four road games by double digits this year, but I think the Browns game was sort of a microcosm of the season. It hasn't always looked super dominant or pretty, but it's effective because Kyler Murray's in the middle of all that. They're sort of similar teams, Chris, in that the fact that Kyler Murray and his greatness offensively, all those weapons, are going to give that young defense that's kind of an island of misfit toys of super talented tweeners time to develop into the group that Vance Joseph wants them to be.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I think this is an overreaction as well. Even though they have the best record, I don't think they're the best team. And, Mike, I would lean toward what you're saying. I think on a neutral field, the Cowboys, the Buccaneers are better teams than the Arizona Cardinals. That's where I'm at with it. I believe in what I've seen from those two teams, especially how dominant both of those offenses have shown themselves to be. So with Cardinals, I feel like I need to see a little bit more, but so far they've passed every single test, so you got to give them credit where credit is due.
But
in my opinion, still the third best team in the NFC.
I would also posit the best team in the NFL, the Buffalo Bills, who are getting ready to play tonight too. Shame on me for forgetting that here on Canty and Golic Jr. What do we got, Dev?
Chris, Kellen Moore will be the Cowboys coach next season.
This is not an overreaction. It's not. And listen, I know I'm going against what I said was one of the favorites to win the Super Bowl this year in the Dallas Cowboys, a team I picked to win their own division. But if for whatever reason they fall short of that goal, even if we're talking about them being in the Super Bowl and losing, I think that gives Jerry Jones enough wiggle room to make the move that we all know he's itching to, which is to fire Mike McCarthy and make sure that he can hang on to Kellen Moore, who undoubtedly will be an NFL head coach next year. So I think he's going to end up taking over this job from Mike McCarthy. And unfortunately for Mike McCarthy, he's going to be on a very short leash. So, yeah, I don't think this is an overreaction. I think this is something that could actually happen.
Yeah, we saw the writing on the wall with this last season with how hot the hot seat for Mike McCarthy got in year one, where he had to fire Mike Nolan as defensive coordinator. Like, that's usually the move you make when you know your job is next. So I don't think this is an overreaction. I think Kellen Moore, Super Bowl is the ultimate goal here. With that being said, if you fell short and the byproduct was Kellen Moore being your head coach, I think a lot of Cowboys fans would sign up for that tomorrow.
Mike, the Bengals will challenge the Ravens for the AFC North division title.
I think that's an overreaction. I think we're going to let that Green Bay game stick in our craw for a long time, forgetting that's kind of a flawed team here. I think ultimately what Lamar Jackson is able to do with this team is a good reminder on offense. On defense, I think Wink Martindale and that company have done an outstanding job of recovering from the injuries in their own right there. That defense played lights out this weekend against a really good Chiefs offense, or against a very good Chargers offense. And so I'm inclined to say that I think this is the Ravens division to lose from here on out, but I don't think the Bengals are going to be able to challenge.
Yeah, I'm with Michael on this one. This is new territory for the Cincinnati Bengals. And you know, when it comes to a young upstart outfit, that there are levels to this, and you have to, you know, methodically go about progress. And I don't think they just jump from being in the cellar of the AFC North for years on end to being a team that wins the division. Not with the Baltimore Ravens playing the kind of football that they're playing right now. Not with Lamar Jackson at the top of the list when it comes to the MVP conversation. So even though I think the Bengals take a huge step and become a playoff team this year, I don't think they're ready to contend for the AFC North crown.
All right, Chris, sticking with you. Joe Judge is on the hot seat for the Giants.
Yes, he's on the hot seat. And if he keeps having post-game sound bites like he did yesterday, talking about being on the submarine and the guys having to patch leaks, then that's going to continue to warm up. But, yeah, I think Joe Judge ends up being in a situation where he gets swept up because the general manager's probably going to be on the outs if things continue to trend the way that they have for the Giants. So, yeah, I think Joe Judge is going to be on the hot seat. And as the losses mount up, the conversation around him being out is just going to continue to get louder.
I don't think this is an overreaction in the slightest. And when you look at their next 3 weeks, Panthers on the road at Arrowhead, home against the Raiders. If they go 1-2 or 0-3, their bye week coming up right after that, I wouldn't be surprised if we're talking about something coming up in that second week of November, looking to make changes in that organization when we get to that time.
All right, we got one extra overreaction. It doesn't have anything to do with the NFL, but this just got added. We're coming back. TJ Watt tweeted, and this was a year ago, so I just want to preface that. Did anyone else grow up drinking milk with dinner every night? Mike, I'll ask you.
Hell no.
Drinking milk with dinner is psychotic. Is that an overreaction?
I think that is an overreaction. In general, I'm pro milk. I did not grow up drinking milk for dinner every night. You know, we were being far less healthy in the Golic household in that ways that should surprise no one. But Chris, I will say my eyes were also open. I don't know where people were at on this. What kind of milk are you drinking for dinner? Because the first time I had whole milk, my eyes were opened. It was like seeing zeros and ones in the Matrix. It's basically like drinking liquid butter, and it was like transformative.
Wow. So, yeah, I'm not a whole milk guy, but I will say this. I don't think this is an overreaction. I think it's really, really strange to drink milk with dinner. I'm just saying that. I think psychotic is a great way to describe it. Very, very descriptive of what people that drink milk at dinner are. Like, it just seems like it's something so strange. Water is fine. You know, if you want to go with something else, okay, that's cool. But milk, I don't know, man. That feels like something that should be confined to the breakfast realm. But
hell,
that's just
no.
Me. That's just me.
Everyone in the room here, milk drinkers or no? Where are we at? Jerry, I want to start with you. Milk drinker or no?
Pro milk, any meal, anything. Well, not any meal. Any, like, breakfast, lunch, or dinner. I'm pro.
This might be an age thing because I didn't with my immediate family, but, like, with my when I had dinner at my grandparents' house, there would be milk, yeah, for dinner.
Cliff?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, thank you,
like,
Cliff.
Like, absolutely not.
All right, at ChrisCanny99, at Mike Golic Jr. on Twitter, do you drink milk with dinner? Coming up next, though, I don't know if he drinks milk with dinner or not, but coming up, Aaron Rodgers had something to serve Chicago Bears fans over the weekend. We'll find out if it was fair or foul on ESPN Radio.
Me and Golic Jr., ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us via the Goodyear Hotline. And Gojo, we got to get into what we saw in Chicago because Aaron Rodgers took a moment to remind Chicago Bears fans that he still owns them, even after all of the speculation this offseason about Aaron Rodgers wanting to leave Green Bay, how he's on the outs with their general manager, Brian Gutekunst. And after they got blasted by the New Orleans Saints in Jacksonville to open week one, it's business as usual for the Packers for the last 5 weeks, including going into Soldier Field and making it a point to let everybody know that he's still that dude.
Yeah, I will give you the most telling Aaron Rodgers versus the Bears stat in just a second, but let's hear from Aaron Rodgers, who went over to the crowd after one play. Apparently a woman in the stands gave Aaron Rodgers like the double middle finger or something like that, And he responded by telling her, I own you, I've always owned you, and going off like that. So let's hear what Aaron Rodgers had to say first about talking trash to a fan in the middle of their 24-12 win.
Sometimes you black out on the field in a good way. I definitely blacked out from a concussion, which isn't a good way. But I looked up in the stands, and in the front row, all I saw was a woman giving me the double bird. So I'm not sure exactly what came out of my mouth next.
Well, I think you know exactly what came out of your mouth. All my bleeping life, I own you, I own you, I still own you. Now, that being said, Chris, he's not wrong in this instance.
No,
because not at all. I saw this stat from Bill Huber, who's a Packers beat writer over at SI. Only 5 Bears quarterbacks have thrown more touchdown passes at Soldier Field than Aaron Rodgers, and they play there 8 times a year.
Wow. 5 quarterbacks, just 5.
That is wow. Alarming.
That is scary. Not to try to one-up you, but I gotta take it here just to show the high level of quarterback play that the Packers have had since 1992 in comparison to the Chicago Bears. So, since 1992, the 60 games between the Bears and the Packers have had 2 quarterbacks in Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, and the Chicago Bears have had 20 quarterbacks during that same span. So, that just goes to show you, one organization understands how to find and develop quarterbacks, the other one does not. It just so happens that the quarterback that the Green Bay Packers found and tried to draft and develop is the quarterback that offends their current quarterback, which could lead to Aaron Rodgers wanting to leave after the season. But I digress. That still has no bearing on what took place yesterday in Soldier Field, which was a whooping at the hands of one Aaron Rodgers who threw for 2 touchdowns and ran for 1 more.
I do say that that's a great stat to underscore the kind of problems that the Green Bay Packers currently have. They got rich people problems, right? Like, their problems are problems the rest of the league looks at and scoffs and says, all right, you're really going to complain about the quarterback that won you a Super Bowl after the quarterback that won you the Super Bowl, that both are going to be Hall of Famers, being upset about the other quarterback that you've drafted in the first round here, when the Bears have to sit over and deal with that. When, I mean, Chris, I'm not going to lie, when you gave me that stat, the first team I thought of was the Browns. Like, how many Browns quarterbacks have we cycled through in that time? If that's the Bears, a franchise who actually has done playoff football things in between now and then, for that ineptitude to be on display, it's amazing.
Yeah, it really is, man. And it just goes to show you that being able to find the most important position in all of team sports, quarterback, determines the trajectory of your franchise and the stability of the people that are in charge of making the decisions there. And so right now, where the Chicago Bears are at, you have to wonder, are they going to be able to do enough to be able to keep stability around Justin Fields, or is this a situation where Matt Nagy and their general manager, Ryan Pace, are going to be on the outs at the end of this year?
Yeah, I think for Matt Nagy, that question is always going to be probably the answer for me, is that he's out at year's end here. It would probably behoove you to start clean for everybody. Because the question we always ask, too, Chris, when you're going to make these kind of decisions is, well, are you handing the next regime a quarterback that maybe they wouldn't have picked? I know of very few people on this earth that would look at Justin Fields and say, yeah, that's a quarterback that I don't want. And based on this season, there's going to be plenty of room for improvement that can make whoever comes next look good. We know what the bar was always going to be for Matt Nagy, likely having to make the playoffs and show that Justin Fields is getting markedly better underneath you. And I just don't feel like those two results, both of them, are all that likely where we sit right now.
No, it doesn't feel like that's going to happen either. Now, we still have a lot of season to go, so we'll have to take a wait-and-see approach as it becomes the Chicago Bears' fate. But I can tell you a couple of things that aren't working in their favor, and that one of them being the development of the Minnesota Vikings and how that franchise has kind of got their season turned around, because they look like a team that's going to contend for the wild card. Also, when you look at what's going on in the NFC West, like there are a couple of teams there that you would think are going to be competitive as well. So, like, if you're Matt Nagy, you know that the playoffs are probably the bar that it's going to take to be able to save your job. I'm not quite sure that's going to be the outlook for the 2021 Chicago Bears.
No, the 2021 Chicago Bears have one thing to be excited about right now, and it's their quarterback. The Green Bay Packers have a little bit more. We can get to their place in the NFC hierarchy as we go along here. But coming up next, we are taking you up to radio coverage of the ALCS game featuring the Red Sox and the Astros. And while Chris Canty, the Yankees fan, hopes they both lose, we can tell you who wins next on ESPN Radio.